Welcome to the Ralph Moore Podcast. Gain a leadership advantage as Ralph pulls wisdom from his bag of over 50 years' experience in planting and leading multiplying churches. Our goal is to help you live as a leader you'd want to follow. You'll learn about making disciples and planting churches, but beyond that, you'll gain practical wisdom about subjects like how to manage your team, handling difficult people, pulling a congregation off a growth plateau, and even money management.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm with one of my great friends in the world, Brian Delmeter. He started something a few years ago called Ocean Water Churches. They're doing stuff you wouldn't believe. And it's just so exciting. You know, the last time I heard, there were 30-some-odd churches. Now I'm hearing over 100. Pretty amazing. And everything's low budget, low overhead, you know, Bible. Exciting stuff in a world where a lot of people don't think that could even happen. So, Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be with you, Ralph. Thank you.
So I want you to, people who've watched this thing or listened to this thing know you pretty well. But I'd like you to just give us a little bit of the story. Start with the bike ride, the genesis of how you got to where you are, and then, you know, tell us the goodies.
Yeah, it did start with a bike ride. That was really the bottom part of my life. I had gone through a very painful divorce in 2007, and I had moved to Ohio to be by my daughter after living in California for, you know, my entire life. And it was out there. I lived down the road from her for a few years. And I decided to do a master's in counseling really for myself and to try to get some answers to why I had short-circuited and gone through such a hard time in my life. And upon completing grad school, I had decided that I would go on a bicycle ride. And I had joked with my friend about riding across the United States. And he said, well, why would we do that when we could ride across Canada? It's twice as far. And so I decided to do that with him, my friend Pete Gladden. And Pete was an accomplished cyclist. He had a national championship, and he had about 75 clients he would coach both for training and for cycling. And he ended up being one of my closest friends when I was living in Ohio. And so we started at the northwest corner of Vancouver Island, Port Hardy, and we rode down to Victoria, took a ferry across, rode through Canada for about 103 days. And then we rode across the U.S. and we ended up spending about a year. We finished down in Colombia. Now, actually, we were supposed to go all the way to Ushuaia, Argentina, which is at the southern tip. But my bicycle got stolen in Medellin, Colombia. And I ended up at that time then living in San Diego. A friend of mine had asked me, my friend Mark Bell, who owns this coffee shop now, had asked me if I would come and volunteer with him at the youth group. And I said, sure, I'll come after my bike ride's done. So after my bike got stolen, I sort of took that as my time to move to San Diego. So on that bike ride was when I learned about people having problems with water. I never knew that. I grew up in La Habra, California, actually where I'm sitting right now, my parents' house. I didn't know people couldn't go to a tap and turn it on and drink out of it. I had no concept of that. So that began kind of this deep dive and going down this rabbit hole of learning about water access, water quality, and, you know, how creating more points of distribution and production could really improve the lives of people. And I got so interested in it that I decided to do a postgrad degree. I ended up doing a doctorate in public health beginning in 2011 after my move to San Diego program. It was a great time of my life. And that was kind of the genesis of it. And as I started to volunteer in this youth group, it was at a large church. It was in San Diego. and I enjoyed it. I loved working with kids. At that time, my friend who was working there as a youth pastor found out that his marriage wasn't going to work out. It was really a total disaster. And so he ended up not working there anymore. And he ended up going to another little church in San Diego. And I went there with him because I was just trying to help him in the youth group. And so I ended up being the parking guy. I had an orange vest and the directors. That was my favorite. That still to this day, I think, is my favorite job at a church was doing the parking. I really, really liked it. And at that time, I was about halfway through my doctoral program, and I decided that I would go into teaching at that time. And I started substitute teaching in inner city San Diego. And I did that for a while. I started to wrap up my doctoral program, and I met Maria, who I know now, and who's my wife now. We've been together for 10 years. And I met Maria, and we decided to get married. And in the same year that I completed my doctoral program and I got married to Maria, I then had Saddleback Church reach out to me about being their youth pastor in San Clemente. And I had a lot going on, you know, as I'm finishing this program and deciding to be married to Maria. And now we were going to contemplate moving an hour north. So that was a super big decision, but it's ultimately something that I decided to do. And I ended up being the youth pastor there for 4 years and loved it. And I mean, loved it. It was a wonderful time in my life. Marie and I loved the church. We loved Rick. I couldn't see myself doing anything else. And I completed my doctoral program, and I attended a missions conference, and Rick had made a comment about, you know, if he could wave his wand and solve any one problem in the world, he would solve the water problem. And, you know, of course I had a degree in water policy, which he wasn't even aware of, which is fine. But I remember I started scribbling these notes, and out of those notes, I wrote a white paper about how I thought Saddleback could develop a new sort of branch of the church. We would call it Saddleback Somewhere, and we would help start smaller Saddleback churches using water projects. And I was all excited about it. And I ended up taking this paper to my friend Kurt, who's actually still there. He was with Rick for 27 years, and he's been with Andy for 3. Now Kurt oversees all of their campuses. And in fact, he just moved to San Clemente, and now we surf together a few times a week. Uh-huh. So, you know, life's about relationships. And Kurt, I shared this paper with him, and I met with Tom Holliday and David Sean, and those were like Rick's sort of lieutenants at the time. And they said, "This is wonderful. This is a great idea. You need to go do it." And I said, "Well, I know that I need to go do it. That's why I wrote a paper, and I'm happy to help get it going." And they said, "No, you need to go and do this because we're year 40 in the history of the church right now. And this is too entrepreneurial of an idea, and we'll just slow you down." And so I joked about them breaking up with me. And so I essentially left with their blessing and decided to start Ocean Water. Now, the crazy part is it must have been about a week or two after I made this decision to liquidate my retirement, 45 years old, and go start a micro network using water projects. I met you, and that was just a real God kind of thing that happened to me in my life. I know I'm kind of rambling to start out here, but.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
And I believe
it was a lot was going on.
I want to interject something. Where we met, you weren't supposed to be, because it was an exponential learning cohort, and we were on the campus of the Capistrano campus from Saddleback, where you had worked until 2 weeks before that.
Right.
And my friend Bill Kuchenauer, who one of my best friends, had this idea that we would have a bonfire at night because we get these 25 groups of 25, actually 75 at once, but they're three groups of 25. And we're trying to bond people together. So we'd make s'mores. So he and I went to Walmart. We bought tons of graham crackers and Hershey bars and marshmallows. And pretty much nobody showed up for those bonfires. There would be four or five people out there. And I was there, and I was getting ready just to go in. I'd given it up that night. This was like in the middle of the week. And you were sitting there all of a sudden. You weren't part of the deal. And we got to talking a little bit. I found out you knew my friend Drew Tevis and then what you were doing. And you were kind of looking for where do I hang my hat. And with us in that particular time of the week was Ed Love, who's the church planting guy for the Wesleyan Church. And it's like, my gosh, God just pulled this together. I was able to introduce the two of you guys. And I mean, it really was an extreme God moment for all of us. I mean, for all that's come out of it, your relationship with Ed, my relationship now with Ed is way richer than it would have been if you weren't there. It's a wonderful thing.
It is a wonderful thing. You know, the kingdom of God's always about relationships. And, you know, I go back to my time and I just think it's so ironic because I really didn't want to leave Saddleback at all. I this is the farthest thing from my mind, but I had one of these moments. I was like, if I don't go do this, like, I'm not going to be able to live with myself. It was kind of one of those things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people describe God's will in different ways. But for me, it was this sense of like, I'm really going to regret not giving this a go. Like I've got to go do this. And, I was terrified. It's probably the best word to describe it. You know, I survived, here I am. But it was a scary thing for me to go try to do that. But there was also a lot going on with me at the time, kind of leading up to that decision. I remember, you know, being feeling this calling and feeling this pull towards this 28 years. And, you know, I had done ministry at that point for about 20 of them. And I had spent half of that time kind of doing kind of organic, you know, decentralized tiny church. And then the other 10 I had spent doing kind of programmatic big church. So kind of both lanes, you know, I loved both. I valued both. I didn't see myself doing something like this again at my age at that time, but I did. And I have no regrets, you know. But a lot of it was, you know, there are a lot of guys, you know, my age that have the administrative gift, I think, that you need to pastor a large church well. And not everyone has that.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of it, I think I'm doing well because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, kind of what I'm gifted at, which I think is helping multiply smaller, more loosely organized churches and congregations. I have friends, you know, my age that pastor some of these larger churches, and their gift set is so extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Guys like Jason Shepherd, you know, I mean, I'm talking about enormously, no, but it's very, very, very difficult to lead. It's harder than ever to lead a church that size and actually do it really well.
Yeah.
And I knew myself well enough to know like that's, I won't be good at that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had that self-awareness. I thought I would do a lot better in a kind of a smaller setting. So I was having some personal discovery too, kind of as I was leading into that decision. That's kind of a little bit of what I wanted to talk about in case anybody, I have a few people that I know are going to listen to this, and I kind of wanted to go into that a little bit, like part of your life experience is you discover what you're good at, what you're not good at. You were an extremely rare leader to be able to do both of those well. You know, I know you won't say this, but I think you were the one of the last churches to build a large church in Hawaii, in the state of Hawaii. Sorry, I'm saying it wrong. But you were one of the last people to do that. That's an enormously difficult thing to do. And I know one of the reasons why I love and respect you is because you have managed to live in both worlds. And that's an extremely rare thing to do. So I was having some personal discovery there about like what I was good at, what I was not good at. And then the other thing is, you know, I had a long list of people that I looked up to in ministry. And the crazy thing is, you know, I looked up to Rick and I looked up to you. And part of it is you guys have both been in ministry for 50 years and loved your wife and been faithful and had integrity. And I appreciate that, you know. And there were a lot of people I looked up to that along the way that, you know, it's not the way it went, you know, and it's not the way it turned out. As Christians, we're not supposed to slander, and I don't believe in that. But I also want to be honest and say, you know, thank you to you and to Rick for being people that I looked up to. I don't know who other people look up to. I'm just saying who I looked up to, you know, and, you know, I appreciate it. Yeah. So it's been quite a journey. You know, I was going through some personal discovery, and then starting Ocean Water was a terrifying thing for me. But I'm glad I did it.
So take us into it, in my mind, because I was there, you know, when you first got going in Sir Coffee in San Clemente. But to me, it's very parallel what you were doing in San Clemente with also what you were doing in El Salvador, the first water project. So talk us through that a little bit. I think people, you know, this is very humble beginnings. This is really starting without much and getting a lot done.
Yeah. And just to be clear, you know,
let me just ask a little further. One of the things that has always intrigued me is the technology behind that first water project, because it was really patched together stuff. And I think people, we've lost this. You know, there's this whole, with the whole seeker movement, there was this, we confused perfection with excellence. To me, excellence is you get the job done and you get it done, you know, reasonably, and nobody's hurt in the process, whatever. Perfection ends up hurting a lot of people. Because we make these standards, and it's always about execution. You got to have the perfect band. For us, the perfect band was you get 12, 13 people up there. Some of them are not plugged in because they're still learning to play. And that's excellent, because we're making disciples with everything that we've got. Perfection is you don't qualify, you're not good enough, and you're by the wayside. So I'm always interested in things where there wasn't a lot of money, there wasn't a lot of resources, but God intervened and good things happened. Talk us kind of the parallel of the two things happening, and then get into the patch together part of it, because that's important. I remember the first night that I was at Sir Coffee when they wasn't even built yet, and you're holding church in there, and it was a crazy melee, Taco Tuesdays, but it was great. I love this stuff.
Yeah, and just to be clear, you know, I wanted money and I wanted people when I left Saddleback. In fact, I asked for both, and I was told that's not how we do it. And I said, no problem. I said, well, will you lay your hands on me and pray for me? And they said, absolutely. In fact, I ran into Tom Holliday last weekend, and we revisited this very moment, and I gave him an update, and it was awesome. It was like 6 years later, you know, how things have turned out. But yeah. And I think, you know, for me now, that was actually super helpful, because I'm helping history, and now I'm able to look them in the eye and tell them, like, I had nothing, man. Like, nobody wrote me a check. Nobody, like, that wasn't how it was, dude.
Yeah.
And that's a comforting idea to a 29-year-old named Giorgio Gomez. It's a guy I'm spending a lot of time with right now, who doesn't have any money for that, and yet God's using that guy in amazing ways. I'll tell his story in a little bit. But So I think that was, God was even in that, you know, that. And so I did not expect, I could not have, you know, I didn't have any inkling in my mind that things would transpire the way that they have. And basically it's been a story of sort of one person at a time that God made it really clear to me. And I wrote their names down because I want to share their stories, because when you hear their stories, then the story of Ocean Water will make sense. Because, you know, when I know you well, and I know your life well enough, that you always, you know, just focused on discipling one or two or three people at a time. And it was those people that went and planted churches over 50 years that got the coconut tree to make new coconut trees all over the world. And I'm having a smaller, you know, version of that, but I think there's a similarity there for me.
It's small because we're still in the early stages. Who knows what it's going to be?
If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe and check his blog at ralphmoore.net.